Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Melanie C., and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Tuesday, September 1st, 2020, and this is a 10 a.m. Eastern Time Big Book Study meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book, and we are on page 2 in Bill's story. We're going to unpack paragraph 2 and 3 today. It begins with, by the time I had completed the course, and ends with, on page 3, with these words, several thousand dollars for that year. Today's readers are Reggie O., the 12 Steps, Nicole C., the 12 Traditions, and let's see, the readers in support are Laura R., Dory P., Elaine B. in unrecorded hour will greet newcomers and get sponsor contact info for you, and Robin P. will finish out to the top of the hour with announcements here, so you want to stick around for all of that. The share ID numbers for this particular Big Book Study meeting yesterday, the 10 a.m., August 31st, 2020, is 15250, 15,250. And then the 7 a.m. Eastern Time Big Book Study meeting this morning, September 1st, 2020, Tuesday, is 15257, 15,257. The OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Reggie O. to please read the 12 steps.
Thank you so much, Melanie. This is Reggie O., gratefully recovered in the Los Angeles area. And these are the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Great to be of service, and I'll pass.
Thank you, Reggie O. from California. I will now ask Nicole C. to please read the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
I can, and I'll let you know.
Great. Okay, thank you. My name is Nicole C. I'm in Morgan Hill, California. I'm a compulsive overeater. These are the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contribution. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thank you very much, Nicole C. from California. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1. To unmute, once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to remute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting and a quiet recording, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted, and that would indicate the star 1 key function only on your phone as your mode of silencing your phone, please, so we have a nice quiet recording. Today we resume our study of the Big Book. We're in Bill's story, which is chapter 1. We're on page 2. We're going to look down at paragraph 2, commenting on 2 paragraphs today. And it begins with, by the time I had completed the course, and ends over on page 3 with several thousand dollars for that year. And I'd like to ask Laura R. to please read those 2 paragraphs today. That will help open us up to the discussion, and then comment her experience and what the directions are there before we open it up to the fellowship. Hi, Laura.
Good morning, Melanie. This is Laura, grateful recovered compulsive overeater in Colorado. By the time I had completed the course, I knew that law was not for me. The inviting maelstrom of Wall Street had me in its grip. Business and financial leaders were my heroes. Out of this alloy of drink and speculation, I commenced to forge the weapon that one day would turn in its flight like a boomerang and all but cut me to ribbons. Living modestly, my wife and I saved $1,000. It went into certain securities, then cheap and rather unpopular. I rightly imagined that they would someday have a great rise. I failed to persuade my broker friends to send me out looking over factories and managements, but my wife and I decided to go anyway. I had developed a theory that most people lost money in stocks through ignorance of markets. I discovered many more reasons later on. We gave up our positions, and off we roared on a motorcycle, the sidecar stuffed with tent, blankets, and a change of clothes, and 3 huge volumes of a financial reference service. Our friends thought a lunacy commission should be appointed. Perhaps they were right. I had had some success at speculation, so I, So we had a little money, but we once worked on a farm for a month to avoid drawing on our small capital. That was the last honest manual labor on my part for many a day. We covered the whole eastern United States in a year. At the end of it, my reports to Wall Street procured me a position there and the use of a large expense account. The exercise of an option brought in more money, leaving us with a profit of several thousand dollars for that year. Ooh-wee. Wow. You know, just, I love Bill's story. Love, love, love it. And, you know, I love this big book because the more I'm in it and the more that's uncovered, you know, seriously, as the years go on in recovery, I see more and more about myself and more how I can relate to Bill. And, you know, this is so amazing. So Bill, like what I'm learning about myself is that I am a chaos creator and I'm currently looking at that in my life. You know, the food was one of the last things to go and caffeine for me. And then now I'm also seeing that I just love to stir the pot. And what's so interesting is that the inviting maelstrom, I looked up what that word maelstrom means, and it's a situation or state of confused movement or violent turmoil. You know, it had him in its grips, like the business and financial leaders were his heroes. So like violent turmoil had him in its grips. He didn't want law anymore. He wanted to go into Wall Street because he loved the turmoil. And I so can relate to that. You know, financial leaders and business and financial leaders were his heroes. I so had people, places, and things as my gods. You know, I loved chaos. I loved, you know, trying to get on top. I just loved that, just the adrenaline of it all. And I, you know, I heard someone this morning share about that it started from such an early age, and I so can relate to that. I just think that I had that, you know, egomaniac with an inferiority complex. So if I have a huge ego, but I feel extremely inferior, guess what? The drive for success is going to be on. I needed to prove to you that I was important because that's the only way that I would feel okay. And, you know, again, I love the words that he chooses out of this alloy of drink and speculation. And I have that what alloy means is taking two things that are separate and making them into one. So drink and food or food. And, you know, business, the drive for success, those two would commence and turn around and cut me into ribbons. Absolutely. You know, and it's just, it blows me away. Again, rightly imagined that they would have, someday would have a great rise. Like I was in so much delusion, illusion, ego, proving to the world. I just didn't, you know, and I always had this God-shaped hole, like huge God-sized hole in my heart. And within my system. And I just didn't know that that's what I needed. So of course, if I didn't feel secure within myself and I had a huge ego, I'm just going to go for whatever I think is going to make me feel okay. And, you know, and again, it's going to just come back and cut me into ribbons. It's going to turn its flight, you know, and cut me into ribbons as the days go on. And that has been my experience. What's so cool about recovery is that, you know, it's been 16 years as I've just been putting one thing down after another, because before I was 27 when I got into recovery. And before that, it was all about my ego. And again, not realizing that what I was searching for the whole time was a higher power. I had no idea until I got into recovery. And thank you, God. God, you know, I came to AA and OA and recovery, and God brought me. God brought me there. And then I got God from the rooms of recovery. Just so glad to be here, you guys, because, you know, one thing after, I'm just learning so much about myself. And again, reading this today, thank you, Melanie. It's just awesome to learn more about myself. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Laura R. from Colorado, in case you want to get in touch with her. Okay, so the lines are now open for additional comments on those paragraphs, paragraph 2 and 3, pages 2 and 3 of Bill's story in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you would give me your name, the first initial of your last name, I can take your name down. But I wanted to also encourage those that we do, you know, invite and value all the experience that comes through on these lines. But if you've shared within the last 3 days or so, please step back so some other people can share their experience, strength, and hope as well. So if you've shared on Friday or Monday, consider maybe tomorrow being your day that you would share instead of today. And I'll take up a lineup now.
Hello, Elaine G. from Florida.
Roz G.
Hi, Roz.
Deb Malky.
Hi, Deb.
Malky G.
Hey, Malky.
Robin P.
Robin P.
Jahara S.
Would you spell your name for us, please?
Jahara, J-A-H-A-R-A.
Very good. Easy breezy, but my ears couldn't hear it. Is it S like Sam?
Yes, correct. You got it.
Okay, great. Great. Thanks so much. And I just wanted to say, which is kind of nice, folks may want to get a hold of you. And if you give the state with your name, they can look you up on the membership list if you have registered there. So I have Elaine G., Roz G., Dev E., Malky G., Robin P., and Jahara S. Elaine G., your 3 minutes start now.
Hi, this is Elaine G., compulsive overeater, recovered, yay, from Florida. And thank you for your service and for allowing me to share. And what jumps out me is the conversations of this morning's meeting as well, and they talk about how we see here how his ego is really inflated. And it's very prevalent in the one statement where he says he couldn't convince anybody to send him out. And so he decides he's going to go anyway. And I think about that about myself with program that I joined OA years ago and that I'm going to do this and didn't do it the way it should be done because I thought I knew I could do it. I thought I had all the answers and all I needed was the material and I could do this by myself. Meh, wrong answer. And so here, in reading this over and over again, it reaffirms for me how important it is to lean into my higher power before I make any decision, not just about food plans, but any decision in my life. And I'm so grateful that that has come to light through the testimonies and shares of others on the line, and that my higher power reveals to me continuously all day long when I allow myself to be open to him and hear him what I'm supposed to be doing. And with that, I pass.
Thank you very much, Elaine G. from Florida. Roz G., you're next, and then Deb will follow you.
Good morning, Melanie and everybody on the line. My name is Roz G., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Palmdale, California. When I read these paragraphs, I like to zero in on business and financial leaders were my heroes. My heroes in my days of being a compulsive overeater, exercise bulimic, were Hollywood skinny movie stars and workout gurus and book gurus. Oprah Winfrey, Dr. Phil, Billy Blank's Tai Bo, another lady who was the taxi. She wrote a book about vegetarianism. If a librarian were to pull up the record of my books that I borrowed, they would be filled from line to line with diet books, because those were my heroes. They were pretty, they were skinny, they were on TV, and they had a solution. And so I bought or borrowed or sought the advice of those people being my heroes. And of course, none of it worked. And it wasn't until I joined this group. I joined OA in 2002. I'm so grateful that I did. I've learned many, many things over the years. But studying this big book, paragraph by paragraph, line by line, and applying it to my life has revolutionized my recovery. I have been abstinent for over a year now. I had my 57th birthday the other day. I'm going to share some hope now. I didn't even think about having cake. My daughter said to me, "Well, Mom, since you don't eat cake, what do you want to eat?" And I was like, you know, I don't really need to eat to celebrate my birthday. I can eat my food plan. She did take me out to breakfast, but I look at menus ahead of time. I know what I'm going to order. I went parasailing on my birthday. That was the high for me, literally and figuratively. So this program has given me a life, and it's also opened up some awarenesses of another issue in my life that I need to work on. That's what abstinent does. It gives me a closeness. It blocks off. It takes the blocks away from God and opens me up to listening and aligning my will with His. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Raj G. from Palmdale, California. Dev E., you're next, and then Malky will follow you.
Good morning. This is Dev E., recovered in Southern California. The part that stood out to me this morning is, we gave up our positions. And then the next sentence, our friends thought a lunacy commission should be appointed. And this makes me think of, what's the difference? Like, how do I tell the difference between what my will is and what God's will is? And I struggled with that for a lot of years. Just like really wanting to know, like, what it, you know, what's, how do I know? How do I know the difference? How do I know I'm not making a mistake? And it's taken time to develop. But my kind of go-to way to decipher it is, if it sounds kind of crazy, it usually is right. It's usually God's will, you know, the kind of decisions that people are like, what? And I just feel it in my heart. My brain will try to fight with it, you know, the rational thought will go like, well, no, that doesn't make sense. And the rational thought is usually just my will fighting against God's will, because God's will takes such a leap of faith for me most of the time, and so much trust. But when I look back on big decisions, it's always the one that was best. And I've been called crazy, and I'm about to make a huge move this week overseas with my family. And a lot of it kind of seems crazy, but I feel so guided by my higher power that it just feels right in my heart. And the big difference also with these decisions is, you know, when I everything I decide on, whether it's, you know, the tiniest thing of like, what do I do next in my day, to, you know, big decisions, I always ask my higher power what to do. And in the past, I wouldn't. And so when there are decisions that are made with my higher power's help and with my higher power in mind, they're almost always right. And when they're ego-driven and made by just like me thinking I can run the show, they're almost always the wrong move for me. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dev E. I didn't catch your stage. Sorry about that. Malky G., you're up next, and then Robin P. will follow you.
Hi, good morning. It's Malky G. from New Jersey. Wall Street had me in its grip. Business and financial leaders were my heroes. Money and success, and the drive for money and success, had me in its grip, tightly clawed around my neck. And I had no clue. I had core beliefs that were so driven and deep in my DNA, and I had no idea. That boggles my mind the most, what I'm learning in my recovery day by day. I had no idea that these were my core beliefs from a very young child that were driving my actions every day, day in and out, to the state of lunacy. Till today, it's hard for me. I still need to work through, and I need to pause and get quiet, that money, success, people with financial and business success, are not my higher power. I've come along. God has taken me a long way in this belief, but there's still a lot of work. I only get a 25-hour reprieve in every single new thought and belief that I am being granted and given in this program. I get 24 hours, and every day I need to work this over again, because when something has a grip, the grip is tight, and only when I take action can my higher power release and relieve it and fill me with a new one. Going further, we gave up our positions, and our friends thought a lunacy commission should be appointed. What struck out to me over here is my higher power really granted me with a nice skill, work ethics, and nice leadership skills, and I had a passion for what I'd done, but I couldn't stay in one position. I would jump around and run from one to the next. The minute I didn't have a high and a crisis and a money in one position, I just got lured by the diamonds of a new position and a new offer that was dangling before my eyes. And I know I had friends, and especially my dad, thought I was nuts. I felt it, but that drive for something new and something different and just not getting fed with the high-end success of what I was doing was just overpowered everything, every sanity. And what I'm learning, what this program is teaching me more than anything, is my disease has severed my attachment and trust in things so severely, and I cannot work, process, do anything to get to true healthy success. I only looked for false success. And real true success, what I'm learning in this program, is I take action day after day, crying, kicking, screaming, but I stick through a process. I gave up position after position after position, and that was my lunacy, and today I'm unemployed, 43 years old. Today I am God granted me a new lease on life, and I'm learning to live through the process called life. Thank you very much for listening. That I pass.
Thank you very much, Melky G from New Jersey. Robin P., you're next, and then Jahara S. will come in after you. And then after that, in 6 minutes, ladies and gentlemen, we'll open up the lines for additional comments on those paragraphs. We're in Bill's story. That's chapter one on page two, paragraph two and three. And it starts as, by the time I had completed the course and ends with several thousand dollars for that year. We're going to hear from Robin for three, so get ready in six. Hi, Robin.
Hey, hi, Mel. Thanks so much for your wonderful service. I'm Robin P. I'm a very grateful recovered compulsive overeater in Vero Beach, Florida. And I really, you know, the difference is here when he's talking about just giving things up and just moving, you know, and people thinking that they were insane. You know, we've been selling our furniture, and we're also leaving the country and moving overseas. And it, you know, with God's grace, and every day, every moment, I'm just surrendering and living in step one, two, and three, and 10, 11, and 12. And thank God for the steps, because if we were doing this without God's grace and mercy and help and guidance and intercession, you know, it would have, I don't think I could have done it. And I definitely wouldn't have been able to do it abstinently. You know, we've been dealing with visas and all kinds of stuff with so much paperwork and so many delays. I think there's a lot of people, a lot of backups going on. So it's just, you know, the difference between doing this with the steps and doing this without the steps and without the covering, without support from people in the program. You know, I do feel like, you know, that thing about feeling like people, our friends thought a lunacy commission should be appointed. You know, our family is sad, you know, but we're doing it with God's grace and the recovery and program, and that's the difference for us. And it's still really challenging one day at a time. It still feels like I have to just keep leaning on God, which is probably exactly where God wants me to be. So with that, I pass. God bless everybody with a very abstinent blessed day. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you very much, Robin. That's Robin P. from Vero Beach, Florida. Jahara S., you're next before we open up a line for additional comments. You have 3 minutes now, madam. Star one, please. That will unmute your line.
Hi there. So sorry. This is Jahara. Thanks for your service. I am in Central California on the coast here, and I'm a recovering food addict and compulsive overeater. So grateful to be sharing on this meeting. This is my first time sharing on this meeting, and I have been in program for, 11 years and abstinent for 8 back to back. This particular, these two paragraphs, I do recall reading these several times, but the part that's sticking out to me is the forging a weapon that one day would turn in its flight like a boomerang and all but cut me to ribbons. That really rang out to me as a juxtaposition to what life is like in program, which is more of a thoughtful process. You know, before I came into program, all my decisions really were like boomerangs. I mean, I didn't know it, but I certainly felt the suffering of being hit by a boomerang over and over and over again after binging and trying to fix things myself. And whereas today it's like, oh yeah, I get those feelings in my body that remind me it's a slow and thorough process, not only with my recovery and my food and my relationship to food, but everything in my life. And I still very much get agitated and irritated and want things to happen quicker. But the closer I stay to program, I'm reminded every single time, whether it's through my sponsor, through someone speaking on a meeting, through the literature, that this is a slow, steady, conscious process. And that doesn't mean I don't take risks, because, you know, of course, here they're talking about this huge risk they took. He packed up everything, went on a road trip, and was starting a new career and working on a farm for a little while, kind of a wispy time in his life. But you can even, I can even tell from reading it, it's so ungrounded and ego-driven, which it says here. And, you know, there's definitely been risks I have taken in my recovery, but those risks have been informed by lots of people knowing about it beforehand and lots of time considering it and planning. And there's still, you know, aspects of those risks that felt fun or exhilarating, but they weren't weapons I was forging against myself. They were higher power guided decisions. And that's the difference, you know, and it's subtle for me. I have more recently actually had tons of moments where I'm like, I want to move out of this country, move to New Zealand. I have all these big grand ideas. And, you know, when I talk to my sponsors, they say, that's not necessarily something you can't do, but I know right now in my heart, it's not something I do right now. It feels too exciting and crazy. And like, I just want to get out of my body and out of discomfort. That's how it feels right now. And that's the difference today. You know, I have that discernment. Thank you. And having a clear food plan is what helps me to have that discernment. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jahara. Let me butcher your name. I'm sorry. Jahara S. from the Central Coast of California. The lines are now open for additional comments. Let's see, where are we? We're in Bill's story, chapter 1, and we're on page 2. Paragraph 2 and 3 is what we're unpacking today, and it starts with by the time I completed the course and reads through. Did I hear Ricky M?
Yeah, Ricky M.
Okay, gotcha. Thank
Riva
you.
G.
Riva G.
Ann D.
Ann D. Oh, nice pause. Ricky M., Riva G., and D. Let's start there. Hi, Ricky. You're 3 minutes.
Hi, Melanie. This is Ricky M. from Philadelphia, recovered. This is amazing to be on this line in a quiet house. It's been 6 months that I was home with my amazingly beautiful children, and today they are back in school. It's... Wow, the reading today was so on target. It seems like just a beautiful story. Like, this is his life, and why do we have to know the details of his life? It's just his process of his business, right? But as was shared before, this is this is addiction. Addiction is flighty. It's emotional. It's not that there's anything wrong with taking risks. There's nothing. Not that there's anything wrong with decisions made. But, like, the reason he's bringing it here, like, it's not by accident. He's not just saying his story. The reason he's bringing it here is to explain that without focus, without a higher power, without a process in life, we're always at that risk of what's driving us? Why are we doing this? You know, And I can totally relate to that. I have taken risks before. I always thought like, oh, I'm so brave. I can do this and I can do that. I can move and I can move again and I can move again and I can change jobs and I can, there's so many things that I can do, but do I need to? Should I? I don't know. How am I supposed to know? And then slowly working through program, I've been in program now a little over a year, I see the shift. Those knee-jerk reactions, those six-lane highways, when things get hard, and they do, and they have, they are hard. I go back to that, okay, where are we going to move, and when are we going to move, and what are we going to do? And then I keep remembering, wait, why? What's the problem? So instead of acting, just like when I'm overwhelmed and it's hurting, do I eat? But if I eat, then I'm dealing with the problem. And this is the same thing. Do I need to move to deal with the problem, or can I just face it and sit in the pain and work through it? So working through program, having done the steps, I learned that the pain won't kill me. The struggle won't kill me. Just sit with it. What does my higher power want? What does he want? What is it? If moving is the right thing, then go ahead. But is it the right thing? Is quitting my job the right thing? Why do I keep wanting to quit and to move to something else? Sometimes it's the right thing, sometimes it's not, and how do we know that? And that's working the program, having an amazing support, and most of all, having a higher power, that when we're quiet, just quiet the noise down, we hear the answer. We really, really do. Sometimes it's just taking a break, sometimes it's stopping for, so, you know, I just recently, my kids were on vacation, I was working, and my body just shut down, and I needed a week off. And that's what my higher power wanted. I had a week off. Now I'm back at work, and I feel invigorated and ready to go. But when I try, when I'm in control, it doesn't work. It's really letting go and letting my higher power run the show. With that, I pass. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you very much. Ricky M. from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Reva G., you're next, and then Ann will follow you.
Hi, this is Reva in Brooklyn. I am in the program for a lot of years, and I'm on Sunday, I'm going to be 86 years old, so I remember a lot of stuff. Back in the days when we had blast-offs from Cape Canaveral, and we were taking rocket ships up to the moon, my then-husband was the science writer for Time magazine, and I went along with him to a night shot, which was going up from Cape Canaveral. And it was really incredible to me that one of the things I saw was the photographer for Time magazine under the tent, a big, big tent with the astronauts around food table, and they sure were pouring the liquor that night. And the photographer for Time magazine was so drunk that he could not stand on his feet. And I said to myself, how is this guy ever going to take a shot? Well, he took wonderful pictures. And one of them, of course, was on the cover of Time magazine. And that was, to me, unbelievable, because I saw somebody practically unable to stand, and then being able to function so well, an addict. Well, it doesn't seem that the addiction puts us out of order completely. We can do some things that are really astonishing. And this is the thing that I think Bill did that was equally astonishing, because in those days, there was nobody doing any reporting on anything anybody was buying down on Wall Street. Nobody was in contact with any of the businesses, and everybody was buying stock totally blind. And now, of course, that was an absolute sea change. And Bill, being the brilliant man that he was, he was the one who said to do it. And when he came back to Wall Street, his alcoholism initially did not stand in the way, because that's how brilliant he was. And it, to me, he's just like an icon for anything I can want to think or understand about addiction. We can be brilliant. We can be loving. We can be, you name it, we could be it, and still be crazy and still be totally dysfunctional And the only thing that's going to save, I don't know about you, but my ass, no matter how well I did anything. And I used to think, oh, well, I'm not an addict. I'm not as bad as that. Well, I am as bad as that. I may not get as drunk as that. Thank you. But I am as bad as that. And I cannot function even though it looks like I can. So thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. Reva G. That's Reva G. from New York, Brooklyn. Ann D., you're up for 3 minutes, please. And then after you, I think I'll have time to take a couple of more. Hi, Ann.
Hello. How is everyone this morning? My name is Ann D. I'm a compulsive overeater and sugar addict. I am newly starting studying the Big Book. This is my second A Vision for You meeting, and I just want to say how grateful I am to be here because it's been a long process. I've been in program 9 years, but have finally, after 9 years of struggling, had the grace of desperation to do the work. So here I am. This really struck me because I've been a sole proprietor all my life, my husband and I both, a couple of different ventures, and we are starting an S-Corp, and we're in prep for that right now. And it occurred to me as we were reading and people were commenting that this is such an opportunity for me to rely on my higher power, who I choose to call God, to help me through this process. I've always been a workaholic or a dog with a bone with any project you can name. And I think I know everything when I'm doing that. And I'm really looking forward to letting God guide me through this process because I can get very narrow focused. And we don't know what the future holds. Everything's really up in the air right now, a variety of reasons of why we just recently decided to incorporate and go into business on our own as a corporation versus a sole proprietorship. And I'm just trying to take it one day at a time and just leave because I've done everything, you know, shooting from the hip all my life. And I'm 62 years old starting a new business. It's like, oh, my gosh. But I'm grateful that I'm where I'm at right now because this is an opportunity for me to do things the way that God wants them done, not the way I want them done. Because when I do it, I made a lot of mistakes. So I'm just very grateful to be here. I can relate to more than that in this reading, but you don't want to hear my whole life right now. So thank you for letting me share, and with that, I pass.
Thank you very much, Andy. Okay, it looks like time will allow for two additional comments for sure on those two paragraphs today, paragraph 2 and 3, page 2 and 3. If you give me a first name, the first initial of your last name, and I'm sorry, I didn't get Ann State either. I couldn't help you there. So who else would like to comment?
Denise B.
Denise, hi. B.
Liz Z. from Connecticut.
Liz Z., is that what I heard?
Yes.
Okay, great. That's the two I can go with for right now, and we'll see what happens after that, okay? Denise B., you're first, and then Liz. What did I say, Liz Z.? I hope so. Okay, we're going to go with Denise. Hi.
Hi. I'm Denise B., recovered compulsive overeater in Dublin, Ireland. Very grateful to be at this meeting. And I just wanted to come in there because I love the story as well. But those two paragraphs really struck me because you can start to see very clearly that he's chasing something outside of himself that he believes is going to make him feel better. And I spent my whole life doing that in active addiction, you know, chasing something that was going to, I believe, be the holy grail that was going to fix me or make me better. Or if it wasn't a geographical change, it was a new job. And if it wasn't a new job, it was new friends. And if it wasn't new friends, it was new relationships. And that coupled, of course, with the food always being my truth. And by the grace of God in recovery today, once I stay spiritually fit and live in this program, live in 10, 11, and 12, I don't have to do that. But yet it can still be such a strong pull for me to want that, to want to look outside of myself rather than seeking within the connection to my higher power, which I call God, because that's ultimately where I get my peace and serenity. And that's ultimately where I get, you know, that real moment of clarity that I don't need to seek outside of myself, that I just need to do and take the action every day that I needed to stay spiritually fit. And then I am rocketed into the fourth dimension and I get to live a life beyond my wildest dreams each and every day and be of service to those around me. So very grateful to have Bill's story and all of those who have gone before me to guide me on that way each and every day. So with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you very much. That's Denise B. from Dublin, Ireland. Liz Z. from Connecticut.
Hi, thank you. Yeah, it's Liz Z. as in zebra. Thank you. Good to be on the line. I really related to this part of Bill's story as well. And just to the part about just chasing success and always thinking that that was going to make me happy and having this definition of success that was defined by other people and external things and really just tying my identity in with that, like who I am depends on how successful I feel and that depends on you. So if you think I'm doing well, then I feel good. And it's providential, I think, for me that this comes up today, because this morning I was writing and I made a list of things that I have worshipped, you know, like that I've idolized in the past, or that I make my God, things that I make my God that I live for. And often those things, it's not until program that I realize those things are driving me. Like they're in my subconscious. And I just kind of feel like that was probably Bill's case too. Like he was chasing me after this thing and he didn't really realize what was driving him. Or if he did, he thought it was going to satisfy him. And anything that's not God is never going to satisfy me. So I just really related to that. I think it just brings me back to that I always have to come back to God. If I'm living my life for anything less than God, I'm never going to be satisfied. I'm never going to have peace. I've been experiencing this a lot lately, like this, the turmoil and in my life and in my emotions and trying to solve it on my own. And it doesn't work. You know, I have to come back to God. And I think something I try to do is like figure out God or like, you know, figure out how I'm going to get God into my life. How can I become more spiritual? Trying to do it on my own when the reality is I can only let go of those things that I'm worshiping, you know, other people's opinions or my success or whatever it is, you know, whatever it is that I'm replacing God with. Once I let go of those, I think God can then come in. Like my job is just to surrender and to let go. And that's my plan for today. So thank you for being on the line and for listening, and I'll pass.
Thank you, Lizzie from Connecticut. There's time for a 2-minute share, maybe 1.5-minute share. Would somebody like to take that?
Hi, this is Sima.
Okay, Sima, you got about 90 seconds or less.
That's good.
Sorry about that.
Sima, great.
In case somebody wants to chat with you.
New Jersey.
Oh, good, thanks.
Sima, grateful compulsive overeater living in recovery. Just grateful to have gotten on this meeting. Just in the last 5 minutes, I've gotten so much wisdom. I was on another meeting earlier, and I said, oh, there's time for me to get on this one. So it's so true what everybody's been saying, and I am living in that glory of God running my life and not me running my life, and God knowing what I need and giving me what I need as long as I get out of the way. Thanks for letting me share, and I pass.
That's fantastic. Thanks so much. That's Sima M. from New Jersey taking us out nicely like that. So welcome, and thank you to everyone that was a service here and those that shared on the line today on Tuesday for the month of September. This is going to be a nicely, wonderfully packed group this time around. Thanks so much for your wisdom and the shares that you gave today. So as we continue to move towards closing out this meeting, I'd like to ask Dory P. to please read from page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. And then right after that, we'll say the Serenity Prayer real quick like as we transition to the last unrecorded portion of our meeting, which is 10 minutes. Hey, Dory, good morning to you.
Good morning. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you.